Call to order the Ways and Means Committee hearing, and we don't quite have a quorum, but we have a long agenda, so we're going to get started. We're going to start with Majority Leader Dean.
It's not mine.
House File 1918.
Somebody else smells good. Maybe it's Ann's.
Oh. Okay. My raspberry spoon.
Raspberry spoon.
I don't even drink.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee. We don't quite have a quorum. As soon as we do, I'll officially gavel to order and take a few business items. But in the meantime, if you would like to explain your bill to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for taking a few minutes of time this morning to look at House File 1918. Which was heard in House Policy, Health Policy, and Health Finance Committees. And what the bill does is it asks the Department of Human Services to answer a couple of questions, questions that they're probably already asking. Number one is, what will we do if the federal ACA or Obamacare is overturned? There are many of us that support that at the state level and at the federal level, but we also have great concerns about what that impacts that will have on our state programs. And so our large health systems are all looking at this. The Supreme Court is currently reviewing this and will be coming out with its decision, I think, in June. At least that's what we're hearing. So there's a possibility, and some would say a strong possibility, that that bill could be overturned. And while it is our agency's job to implement current law, which is the ACA and Obamacare, it is also our prudent responsibility to predict what will happen to our state programs and to our budget if that is overturned. I have a strong concern about this because states like Minnesota tend to do a very good job of providing low-cost, high-quality health care to our Minnesota citizens, low-income, elderly, and disabled on Medicaid, Medicare. And we probably have more to lose than just about any other state if we are saddled with federal burdens and federal obligations at the state level. When Obamacare is overturned, and that the state, along with, should join our insurers and other hospitals and providers in starting to grapple with this question beforehand rather than after the case. So I think it's just prudent. The question is, well, why would you want to ask this question now before the decision comes out? And the answer to that question is that we will not be here likely when that decision comes out. We will likely come back in January of 2013, and at that time be grappling with this in a budget year. So I think it is just prudent to do so. There's three concerns and issues with the bill. The first is a fiscal note of $44,000 from the department. I believe that that should be that they should be looking at this currently, and if they're not, they should be. They are negligent in not doing so because Minnesota has a lot to lose, and we, from a planning standpoint, just prudent planners would be doing that. If they are doing so, they should certainly share that information with the legislature in real time. I believe that that is prudent to do so. So I don't believe that the fiscal cost is warranted. And I believe that it should be absorbed by the department and have a zero fiscal cost. And if the department is supporting a fiscal cost or an additional cost, I think they have a strong case to make, or we have a good question to ask, is why aren't you currently doing this? Because other insurance groups and providing systems across the state and across the country are currently doing so. So that is the first concern, is the fiscal note, and that is my answer to that. The second is a concern around this time of year with folks. If people see small bills moving that don't seem to have great impact, there's great concern that these might be vehicles for other bills. And there was an action alert sent out last evening about that this may be a vehicle bill for an insurance exchange. I can tell you that is not the intent, that is not the case. Sometimes when people say they are actually interested in policy and decision making, we actually are around here, even in the last week of the session, and that is my intent. And I think I have a good reputation in the legislature for dealing pretty squarely on the issues of health care, and have built up some trust on both sides of the aisle with that statement. That is simply not the case. The third point and concern that has been brought up is that the language could be interpreted by the agency to expand the intent of the bill to something that it is not currently intended to do, that there may be ambiguity in the language or the interpretation of this to allow the Department of Human Services more latitude and perhaps to go into an unintended consequence, or perhaps into areas that might not be in concert and perhaps in conflict with the intent of the bill. I understand that. I've seen that happen, and I want to guard against that as much as anyone in the legislature, so I understand that. And for that reason, Madam Chair and members, rather than forward this to the General Register, I would ask that the Chair lay the bill over, and I would seek additional help from advocates to improve the language of the bill so that we can tighten the language to the extent that it brings comfort to those that are concerned that the agency would have too much latitude in interpreting this bill.
All right, thank you, members. We do now have a quorum. I'll call the meeting to order officially. Mr. Smith will note the roll. Representative Hamilton will move the minutes from the April 16th meeting. Are there any questions, additions, corrections? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Minutes are approved as distributed. I'll next move House File 1918 for consideration by the committee. We just heard Majority Leader Dean describe his bill and ask that it be laid over. Are there any questions or comments prior to that? Representative Huntley.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Dean, I was very happy to hear you say that Minnesota has a lot to lose if the Affordable Care Act is turned over by Congress, or by the Supreme Court.
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, thank you. I have two quick questions for Representative Dean. I'm glad to hear you're laying it over to, I think in your words, look at the language and tighten it and so forth. I've gotten a couple of dozen emails in the last 30 hours, none of which support the bill. In fact, I have a two-part question. One is, I'm referencing a constituent who indicates he's a practicing physician. First of all, number one, I think the bill has currently had language about, quote, emphasizing personal responsibility and involvement in making choices. Yet this physician, and I'd like you to comment at this time on it, says that the exchange bill is, and these are his words, just more government bureaucratic red tape, which acts as barriers between patient and physician in the practice of efficient cost-effective medicine.
Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Smith. First of all, to Representative Huntley's comment, I support the overturn of the ACA of Obamacare. And I think that that would free Minnesotans, as you know. We're on different sides of that issue. And I think that saddling Minnesotans, and particularly Minnesota programs, with the burdens and mandates of Obamacare would be a step backwards, and that's what I mean when I say that we have more to lose than other states if that is done so. To Representative Smith's comment, the physician that you're is bringing a concern is a very valid one about an exchange. This bill, and he's concerned that this bill might be a vehicle for an exchange. That's not what this is. This is asking the department to report back on what would happen if Obamacare is overturned, and what are we going to do about it, and how are we going to protect state programs from the same mandates that would currently be implemented if a federal law is imposed upon us. So I think the email that was sent out was anticipating that this would somehow be a vehicle for another bill, which is an exchange bill. And because of those concerns, that is not the case, as I said. This is not meant to be a vehicle for anything else. This is a concern that I have. It's one of two bills that I'm carrying this year. The other bill is the bill that would put on the a constitutional amendment protecting Minnesota from Obamacare. It's seen as in concert with that. So the emails, if they seemed a little strange coming to you about one of my bills from this, were strange to me as well. But as I said, it is the last week, or hopefully one of the last weeks of session around here, and people are very concerned, and I'm glad they are. I hope folks are concerned about too many things rather than not enough things around here on the last week of session, and it's good to be a little bit more cautious about any bills moving forward. So I certainly do that, and certainly agree with that, and certainly don't want to further that with the discussion.
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, Representative, it seems like a reasonable answer. I appreciate that. The second comment that was made in this particular email references lines 1.19 and 20 of the bill provide patients and healthcare providers with financial incentives to use and deliver healthcare services efficiently and achieve better health outcomes. The physician quotes that particular language verbatim, and he says, quote, "This means state government can further restrict reimbursements to doctors and other providers according to their compliance with government-issued treatment directives. It also means the state is authorized to continue interference in the care of all patients, not just covered and subsidized patients, because doctors are, quote, scores, unquote, for compliance in our entire practice."
Sure.
Representative Dean.
What's that referencing is just some of the language that we've used from state-based programs like GAMC and Minnesota Care that would allow more flexibility, not less flexibility. So what we want is we don't want to have mandates from the federal government on our benefit set and how we practice medicine. We want more flexibility, not less flexibility, as we move forward. And we want fewer mandates from the federal government, not more mandates. So that's what that's trying to get at.
Thank you, Madam Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I was just curious if the majority leader was making an announcement here this morning. Twice you've referred to this as the last week of the session.
Maybe that's perhaps it's wishful thinking, Representative Carlson. But as we're thinking and as the Ways and Means Committee, I know you've got a lot of bills on your plate today, and I hasten to take any more of your time because I know it's precious and you've got a lot of bills moving through. But that's probably just my cautious nature, and also my admonition to members is to, if you need things to move, get a move on and get moving today. So I'm aware of our deadlines and our constitutional deadline as well, Representative Carlson. It's not an announcement of any kind. It's more of an admonition to get a move on if you haven't got your bills dusted off and ready for paint or dried already.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Dean, rather than an admonition, I thought it was just wishful thinking.
Could be.
Or hopeful thinking.
Any other questions or comments before we lay this bill over? Seeing none, I move to lay House Bill 1918 on the table. Thank you, Representative Dean. Is Representative...
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for your time. Sorry for your email basket this morning.
Thank you. Is Representative Sanders in the room? He sat here for hours the other day, so I promised I'd get him in as soon as he got here. Okay. Representative Norton. And Representative Davis, it's my understanding you'd like to move House File 462.
That is correct.
All right. 462 is for the committee. Welcome, Representative Norton, if you'd like to explain your bill, a little bit about the fiscal note, and then my understanding is we also have an amendment.
Yes, we do, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. Morning, members. You have before you the nurse licensing compact bill. The Nurse Licensing Compact is an agreement between two or more states that allows recognition of a nurse licensure in good standing in all the states that participate in the compact. It's a mutual recognition model, sometimes likened to a driver's license, where each state has their own rules, regulations, and tests, but when you drive from one state to another or practice from one state to another, that valid license is recognized. The difference being, let me back up. In order to be licensed in nursing, you have to pass a test, the same test nationwide, the NCLEX test. So all nurses meet the same standard of quality throughout the states. The differences that you see in licensing occur when you continue, when you re-up that license and you have different continuing education credits. Some states have more requirements than ours, some states less, and so that is one difference that I want to point out. When you renew a license, there are some differences. Under the compact, you would renew your license in the state that you live, and then you could cross borders.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Minnesota, including Rochester, have nurses practice across borders currently. There is a law on the books that's a border state agreement. This would change that. Currently, the states that border us, their nurses can come into the state of Minnesota to practice, but our nurses do not have that same availability to go into those states because they're compact states and they require that you be a member of a compact. So the nurses in Minnesota are limited in their ability to go into Iowa, Wisconsin, the Dakotas, without purchasing licenses in each and every one of those states. So this bill really is about modernization. As you all know, telemedicine, e-medicine is becoming more and more common. It supports a medical home model where folks can get their care in one place and then call back or recontact the institution that they received their care. And as I mentioned in my area, that's Mayo Clinic. This is very important to them because they do follow up with their patients, and it would be easier if the nurses didn't have to purchase licenses in all the states that their patients are living in. So I'm happy to answer questions about that. There have been some issues raised in other committees. This did pass out of Health and Human Service policy on a bipartisan fashion. Didn't quite have that same level of support in GovOps a year ago, but it was a more partisan vote. But I'm hoping we can reach beyond the partisan differences and see this as a modernization of nursing, and we can move ahead with that. I'm happy to answer specific questions you may have, but I know this committee focuses primarily on the financial aspect, and so I do have an amendment that deals with the appropriation that we can get to when you're ready.
All right, thank you. I believe Representative Davids is going to move the A1 amendment with an oral amendment
at
the advice of Mr. Marks. So, members, if you'll take out the A1 amendment, Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll move the A1 amendment, and I would like to make an oral amendment to the A1 amendment on page 1.5 after the period. We would delete the base level funding is $6,000 each year and insert the state government special revenue fund base appropriation is increased by $6,000 in fiscal years 2014 and 2015. Maybe Ms. Novak, or if we have that oral amendment.
We do also have it in writing. Mr. Marks, if you are, give your rationale for...
Why am I doing this?
Madam Chair and Representative Davis, I think it just clarifies that this is the base from the state government special revenue fund. It's increasing the underlying appropriation base for the Board of Nursing by $6,000 a year. It's $149,000 in fiscal 13, and that would drop to $6,000 in 14 and each year after.
And Representative Norton, it's my understanding you're okay with that.
That'd be fine.
All right. Any questions on the A1 amendment as amended? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A1 amendment as amended is adopted. Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Norton, thank you for bringing this forward. Thanks for your leadership on this. I just wanted to add to what Representative Norton has said, members, that while this has been viewed as a partisan issue, I see it as a nonpartisan issue. The Mayo Clinic folks were here yesterday, and I'm just using them as one example. I'm sure a number of other health systems in our state, particularly operating around our borders, could describe the same thing. But if you look at where these health systems are operating, they don't necessarily recognize borders. They're trying to serve regions or areas. And when a nurse who is 2 miles away from the border is asked to go deliver services at a clinic that's 2 miles on the other side of the border and can't do it because of these boundaries, it gets in the way of quality health care. It gets in the way of health systems based here in Minnesota doing their job. And Mayo Clinic, Mayo Health System is just one example. So we need this. It's important. I understand there are some concerns from the Nurses Association Union. I understand there are also unions in support of this for the very same reason. This means jobs. This means economic activity. It means quality health care for Minnesota. So for those who might be inclined to vote on this as a partisan issue, I would encourage you to rethink that. This is the right thing to do for Minnesota.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I want to thank Representative Norton for carrying this bill and representing a border community. I can attest to the fact that this, if we don't do this, we're continuing to have a very serious problem in nursing people being able to move across the border. And so thank you, Representative Norton, for bringing this bill forward.
Representative Huntley.
Madam Chair and members, this is a tough vote for me. I have a 98% labor voting record, and that's probably going to go down to 96%. I believe Minnesota nurses will be the big winners if we pass this. And I'll give you the example of my community. St. Mary's Duluth Clinic also owns the hospital in Superior. So there's a constant back and forth of the patients depending on which specialist they need to see. The question is, how do you coordinate the care? And a lot of you know that I'm very interested in medical homes for people that have chronic illnesses. And the whole point of that is to have a nurse that is monitoring the care that a particular patient is getting. And if that patient happens to be getting some of his care in Minnesota and some in Wisconsin, how do you coordinate that care if the nurse can't work across the two borders? The SMDC system goes from all of northern Wisconsin to Idaho. And if you go down to the Twin Cities here, there's lots of clinics in Wisconsin that are run by Minnesota Delivery Systems. If you go down a little bit further south, the Mayo Clinic has all kinds of affiliated hospitals and clinics in western Wisconsin, northern Iowa. If you go to the western part of the state, we have the same problem. Actually, we might lose a little there because the Sanford system runs most of that. But there's so much back and forth between the states that we have to have a system that can easily adapt to that. So that's why I'm supporting this bill.
Representative Champion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Norton, I'm not on Health and Human Services or any of those committees, but one of the things that came up as Representative Huntley began to talk, and we talk about the border states, and we're talking about how regionally nurses are able to, if this bill passes, cross state lines and participate in our system. So my question is fiscally related. What happens if there's an allegation that a nurse has not performed to the standard or level that they're supposed to? And so who would oversee that, and would that drive or lead to some additional costs that's not reflected in our fiscal note?
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Champion. Actually, the compact provides a even more stringent or more coordinated effort for public safety. When the Board of Nursing is still, of course, involved, and they're here today listening, they still provide oversight, and they will provide someone to work with the compact. But when an allegation is made, the compact keeps track of all allegations across the country in the compact states. And the nurses, there's a nurses, it's NURSYS system that keeps track of all the allegations and where the process is, the due process, how where it stands, and actually can flag nurses that have had a charge made in one state so that the other states will know, and then they will see how that is taken care of. The state that the charge might be made in, an allegation might be made in, is the one that follows through, but the whole compact system will have access, and we'll see where that has gone. Actually, in a conference call with the compact, they assure us that actually it's more safe for the patient. It's easier to follow. Each state, you don't have to call each state licensing board to find out that answer. The licensing board will actually report to the compact what's happened and keep them updated.
A follow up?
Certainly, Representative Chair.
So, Madam Chair, thank you so much. And so, Representative Norton, so I understand from your response, and thank you so much for your response, that there is a tracking system that will allow, let's say, Minnesota to know if there's a nurse that hasn't done an excellent job or hasn't been up to standard. But my question still digs deeper, I think, and perhaps you answered this and I just missed it, around the due process notion. I'm still looking at the cost, because if I'm the Board of Nursing or I represent the Board of Nursing and there's some allegation that happens in Minnesota, what about the financial considerations of how I bring that nurse back here, that we go through our due process? I'm looking at that particular cost. Have we really thought that through?
Well, Madam Chair. There are 20-some states that participate in the compact, and I can only assume that this was taken into account when the fiscal note was drawn up by the staff. I didn't drop the fiscal note personally, but as I understand it, the due process will continue as it currently does. So if the nurse is practicing and an allegation is made now, we would pay for it, just as after the compact, that doesn't change. So I think it currently happens, and I would say the one difference is nurses do practice in this state now from Wisconsin, Iowa, North and South Dakota with their licenses in their other state, and so they do know what it would cost from that experience.
Just a last comment, Madam Chair. You know, I'm very much in support of trying to be as helpful as possible, because patient care is very important, and I think it's important for us to work cohesively with each other. But I am concerned about the due process question, because I think we really do have to drill down and think practically through how do we make sure that we're being as supportive here, but how do we really make sure that patient care is being really considered so that if someone has not performed to the level that we think that they should, how do we make sure that there's a revenue available in order to deal with that in real time? And so that's just my concern. And the fiscal note fails to talk anything about due process and what do we do if we unfortunately have such a situation where someone isn't performing up to standard.
All right, thank you. Representative Norton.
Yeah, I would just like to follow up, but I completely appreciate that. I certainly want quality nurses and quality patient care, which I think we have in this state, and in fact, you know, I would brag that probably better than many other states in the country. And I would just also like to say that if folks have questions, the Board of Nursing is supporting this, and they could answer those specific questions about how due process would occur, and they have answered it offline. I just don't feel qualified to answer it any more than the Board of Nursing would take care of it, as they always have. So, but please follow up with Shirley Bracken from the Board of Nursing.
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, I preface my entire comments here with this statement. I have for 26 years, I've totally avoided being on Health and Human Service or having anything to do with it. So I know nothing about it other than the fact that, you know, I got a back pain right now. It's in the lower back. It's even a little lower than that, but I think that's from you guys. So anyway,
not responsible for that,
Representative Norton, you know, I don't, as we expand health care and it gets bigger and bigger, Representative Huntley mentioned St. Mary's Duluth Clinic. Representative Huntley, they're Ascension now. They're not St. Mary's Duluth Clinic anymore, and they've crept up into my area, and in fact, they're taking over a little clinic, and because of National Labor Relations Board and different unions, the people are going to lose $1 an hour automatically, so, and the health care isn't as good. You know, when Ascension took over the East Range Clinic in Virginia, we had 22 doctors, we're down to 12. People of Virginia bonded for a $23 or $24 million clinic, and
things haven't gotten better. So, you know, as we expand and get bigger and make these compacts, I don't know if healthcare delivery is going to get better. I think it's going to get worse. But my question to you is this. If a physician is licensed in Texas, can they come up and go into a clinic in Duluth and start practicing, or do they have to actually prove that, you know, that or get a license here or whatever? Because I think nurses in most instances are as important, if not more important, than the physician. They're the people in the trenches that take care of us when we're laying in that hospital bed. So, I mean, is there a similar compact for physicians?
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rukavina, you touched on it in your own words. Nurses are the primary caregivers of our patients, and that is why this bill is being brought forward and why the compact has been working in other states, because it is nurses who follow up with the patient. The doctor provides the bedside care, but it's the nurses who provide the long-term follow-up care, which is why under the medical home model, as Representative Huntley mentioned, having this compact will save the nurses and the folks that might reimburse the nurses for their licensors funding. So I don't know what the doctors are doing. That's, this bill is about the primary care provider for the patient, which is the nurse, and we think this is the right way to go. And we think with email medicine and telemedicine, this is taking over our country, and why would we make nurses buy 50 licenses when we can participate in the compact and let them be licensed in the great state of Minnesota with our high-quality standards, but be able to provide care outside our borders?
Well, I don't know. Madam Chair, when's the last time anybody had open heart surgery with email medicine, but you know, or telemedicine, but I don't. If it's good for the nurses, it should be good for the doctors, and we should start with the doctors then. So if you don't know the answer to that, then I don't know the answer to that. Maybe Representative, you know, Huntley or somebody with more expertise than me can answer that question. But I don't think this is a good idea right now. And quite frankly, with it worries me because I've seen when there was a strike up in Hibbing that nurses come in from other places, and you don't know what they know or if they know anything. Or, you know, I don't know if a nurse in from Texas is, I don't think they're anywhere near as good as the nurses that are trained in Minnesota and licensed in Minnesota. So I'm not going to support the bill myself.
Thank you, Representative Rukavina. Very briefly, Representative Norton, we have about 10 bills and don't really want to come back tonight if we don't have to. So briefly.
Well, I would just respond. When there has been a strike, the nursing board is able to give emergency license in 24 to 48 hours anyway. This would actually allow us to know ahead of time what nurses can practice in the state and what licenses they have and how top quality they are, rather than an emergency license procedure, which can be done during a strike currently. So.
All right, thank you. Representative David renews his motion that House File 462 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay.
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Norton.
Thank you.
Representative Sanders, and then after you, we'll take up Representative Merkel. Welcome to the committee. I will move House File 2136 to be heard by the committee, and there's also an A2 amendment in our packet. Welcome to the committee, Representative Sanders.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. And Madam Chair, the A2 amendment is kind of the crux of why we're here, speaking kind of directly to the fiscal note. The A2 amendment should mitigate the fiscal note by dropping the amount what a salvage title would be recognized at from 9,000 back down to what it currently is at 5,000. If we do that, this is basically an inspection fee, and it should mitigate the fiscal note. And if you'll move that and adopt that, I think that should please the committee.
All right, members, any question on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A2 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A2 amendment is adopted. Any questions on the base bill or the fiscal note? Seeing none, I'll renew my motion that House File 2136 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the general register. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Representative Ferkelson.
All
all the way up.
Welcome to the committee. I'll move House File 2458.
I can't remember Wally.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. House, we do have an 810 amendment to get the bill in the shape we need it to be in.
All right, members, I will move the 810 amendment to House File 258. If you want to briefly explain what the amendment does relative to the fiscal note.
Thank you, Madam Chair. 2458 is the advisory inspections bill. The A10 amendment is really helps us address getting our fiscal note down to zero, and also we had a number of FTEs that were part of the fiscal note. The A10 amendment will also greatly reduce that FTE situation with the fiscal note.
Right, members, are there any questions on the A10 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A10 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A10 amendment is adopted. So, Representative Torkelson, any additional information you want to share with the committee, or we'll see if there's any questions?
I would be happy to stand for questions.
All right. Any questions on Representative Torkelson's bill? Seeing none, all those in favor of House File 2458 as amended say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. You're on your way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Clark.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
All right.
Let's get Beard up there so we can beat him up a little bit, Madam Chair.
Representative Lanning, are you ready to go with your...
That's why I told everybody I liked
Representative Lanning moves House File 2269 for consideration by the committee. Welcome to the committee, and there is an amendment being distributed as we speak.
Yeah, Madam Chair, first of all, I would like to offer the A3. I move the A3 amendment.
And it's just being passed out, but if you want to explain to the committee the A3 amendment.
The A3 amendment, Madam Chair and members, clarifies that this appropriation is to be, it's appropriated in the 2013 fiscal year beginning July 1. Otherwise, the current language wouldn't necessarily specify that that's the case. So I would ask your support on the A3 amendment.
All right, members, the A3 amendment appears to be pretty technical. Are there any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A3 amendment say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The A3 amendment is adopted. There's an additional amendment being distributed at this time. I don't know the number on it because I don't have a copy, but
that's good.
All right, the A4-1 amendment. Representative Lanning,
yes, I would
that?
I would move the A4-1 amendment. The A4 amendment that's in your packet had a typographical error, so this was needed to clarify what the recommendation is, and the A41 amendment modifies the appropriation amount from $1,080,000 to $750,000. And then it also adds clarification that the Secretary of State must not make any reductions to the Business Services Division to offset any reductions to Election Services. And I would ask your support for this amendment, and then I will discuss the bill as amended.
All right. Members, any questions on the A4-1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The A4-1 amendment is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. In last year's state government finance bill, we decided to defer action on HAVA. That's the Help America Voters Act, which required us then to take action now this session on the proposed budget. The HAVA funds are federal monies that are provided to states for the purpose, first of all, of providing accessible voting equipment in polling places, and secondly, to develop a statewide voter registration system. At the present time, we have a balance in our HAVA fund of $1.8 million. But I want to point out to members that the future of federal funding here is very questionable at best. And so we do not believe that it would be prudent to spend all of the money that is currently on hand. And so we're recommending that we authorize at this point in time $750,000, which would leave $1,050,000 available to next year's legislature to also appropriate as needed. So members, with that, I guess I would entertain any questions.
Certainly. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, being that we're dealing with one of the accounts within a constitutional officer's jurisdiction, does the Secretary of State support this?
I saw Ms. Frazier here earlier. I'm guessing they're going to come down and say they don't like the lower dollar amount, if you'd like her to come down and say that. I'm sure
well, I guess we should, when we pose a question, we should have it as a matter of record. Yeah. But we do try to, some degree, respect the role of the constitutional officers and their opinions on administering their agency. That's why I posed the question.
All right. Thank you, Representative Carlson. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Frazier, if you'd like to state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Beth Frazier with the Office of the Secretary of State. And our office is very appreciative of all of the work that Chairman Lanning has been doing to appropriate some additional Help America Vote Act funds to us with the presidential election this year and with finishing up redistricting. It's really needed for our office. And as the chair expected, we would, we had asked for $1.425 million, but $750,000 will be very helpful, and are appreciative of this as well.
Thank you. Representative Carlson, any?
I guess I won't pursue it any further. It sounds to me like they do have some reservations, but perhaps can get by with the $750,000. Am I interpreting that correctly?
Ms. Frazier.
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, I only learned about the $750,000 this morning, so I still need to discuss it with other staff, but this will be very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Representative
Kahn. Madam Chairman, did I miss something? What is the reason for cutting it to $750,000?
Representative
Kahn. As I pointed out, the future of HAVA funding is very much in doubt, and we don't feel that it's appropriate to spend all of what's available. And we've been talking with the Secretary of State's office all along about trying to find ways to pare back the needs in this current biennium. And this will leave $1,050,000 still available on reserve, so that next year's legislative session can appropriate that as may be needed.
Well,
it still seems to me that looking at the needs of elections, that this year, with the issue of redistricting and with the possibility of the passing of a constitutional amendment, and in fact with two constitutional amendments on, might be higher than any other time. And I don't understand it. It's federal funds. They can't spend it unless we appropriate it. And I assume that they spend it on things that are appropriate either through their office or the federal funding. I don't understand why the legislature would want to keep further control over this.
Representative Kahn, I think we heard we don't view that this money is going to continue to flow into the our ability to kind of meter it out and have it for other uses in the future. We did review a number of documents from the Secretary of State's office about uses. There was $100,000 for a felon voting program that we don't think is going to be enacted. We went through the list. Representative Lanning, if you'd like to add to that, certainly you can.
Well, Madam Chair and members, if the voters approve the constitutional amendment, next year's legislature is going to have to come up with funding well beyond that $1,050,000. Much more is going to be needed, and so that's something that the next legislative session is going to have to address.
Representative Kahn?
So not passing the constitutional amendment could save an awful lot of money for the state.
I thought that's
what I heard Representative Lanning say. I thought that that's the, that if we pass it, it's going to cost some very large amount of money, which is why we have to not appropriate all of this. We have to save it for it. So as I understand linguistics, that means that not passing it means that we don't have to spend that very large amount of money.
If
there's any other interpretation, someone could point it out to me.
Representative Lanning.
Well, Madam Chair and Representative Kahn, let's put it this way, that if the voters approve the constitutional amendment, we're going to have to come up with significant amount of money, but we're not talking about many millions of dollars. I don't know what the latest fiscal note estimate might be, but it's going to be nothing like $10-20 million, a couple million maybe, is what I understand from past discussions. But that's an issue that the legislature will face if the voters approve the amendment.
Well, I just think we ought to take every opportunity to make sure the voters know this when they're thinking about approving the amendment.
I'm sure there'll be lots of discussion about the constitutional amendments. Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Madam Chair, I think you started to go down the road, but if maybe Representative Lanning could expand a bit, because I don't see a fiscal note or anything here, but how was the 750 arrived at? The chair mentioned a couple of things as opposed to 800 or 700 or... and I'm picking up on the fact that the representative from the Secretary of State's office indicated that they just this morning saw the number 750. So what kind of a foundation is building to that number?
Representative Lanning.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, I did not want to see us come forward micromanaging what the Secretary of State's office ought to do with every dollar. I don't think that's appropriate. We ought to have confidence that they will spend the money wisely as it's needed. And so we're not dictating to them how each and every dollar of the 750 is to be spent. And I don't think that would be appropriate for us to be able to do that. They need some flexibility in terms of how that money is spent. Maybe Ms. Frazier wants to comment on that.
Ms. Frazier.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The majority of the Help America Vote Act funds are dedicated to professional elections staff and the computer staff who support the statewide voter registration system and the election reporting system. So that's where the majority of those funds go. They also go to a variety of contracts that we have, including with the Department of Public Safety, for data matching and other services. So we had originally asked for $1.425 million, and in the last committee, the amount was reduced to $1,080,000, and now it's been reduced to $750,000.
And Madam Chair and Representative Lanning, I agree with your comments. That's why I originally raised the question that we do respect the role of our constitutional officers in giving them the flexibility to manage their agency, because just like us, they do have a constitutional right. Mandate. And I'm not sure that I really arrived at an understanding, though, of how you picked the 750. I think you're saying that you feel that the 750 gives them the flexibility, and I don't know whether that does or not, especially when the testimony from Ms. Frazier is that they had originally asked for the larger number. And I'm just trying to figure out what the impact is with the lower number, or how you arrived at that in light of your own comments about wanting to make sure they have the flexibility necessary to manage the office.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, it's a compromise. I mean, we've had some forces that do not want to appropriate any of that HAVA money, and I think that's unreasonable. I think this, in effect, is a compromise proposal. Let me also point out what the Senate has done. The Senate has micromanaged. They've had there, what they've got before them is $220,000 is specifically specified, $50,000 for military overseas, $120,000 for local official support, $50,000 for the felon letter issue, and $1.2 million for voter ID, for a total of $1.42 million. And obviously, if that remains the Senate position and what we're proposing here ends up being the House position, we're going to have a conference committee to try and work out the differences that there are between those two bills.
Well, Madam Chair, I think as this moves forward, we need to get some feedback, at least some of us, from the Secretary of State's office to really find out exactly what this number means in terms of the ability to manage the office through a crucial election period of presidential year. So thank you.
Thank you. Any additional? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And to Ms. Frazier, there seems to be a lot of comments about how we got to $750,000. My question is, how did the Secretary of State's office get to $1.5
million? Ms. Frazier.
Madam Chair and Representative Davids, we looked at the needs of the office and came up with that number. It also included about $200,000 for a bill that Representative Benson was carrying on behalf of the Election Integrity Task Force to improve data matching related to felons and notification of felons to be sure that they don't vote. But the office has consistently spent about $1.2 million in HAVA funds each fiscal year for going back since the HAVA funds have originally been appropriated, primarily on enhancements and maintenance for the statewide voter registration system and the election reporting system, as well as voter outreach and supporting local election officials.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Davids.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any additional questions or comments?
Nope.
Seeing none, Representative Lanning, if you'd like to renew your motion.
Madam Chair and members, I would renew my motion that House File 2269, as amended, be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register.
Right, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Lanning. Representative Kiffmeyer. House File 2555.
This is big government.
Representative Kiffmeyer moves House File 2555 for consideration by the committee. And members, there are a number of amendments to this bill as well. I picked up some extra language, I think, in Representative Abler's committee, and I hope he's here. He was here earlier.
Madam Chair, I can go through the amendment because that includes some of that.
All right. Which amendment would you like to take up first?
Amendment 825 is the only amendment that I have, Madam Chair.
All right. Representative Kiffmeyer moves the 825 amendment.
All right. Madam Chair, this amendment has to do with language prepared for Ways and Means that takes care of the funding issues and also includes sections where, at the request of a variety of entities, just clarifying changes to the original language And so you have that here. So sometimes it was the Commissioner of Health, sometimes the Health Board, sometimes Department of Administration, but a variety of them just making sure that their language is accurate. One thing that does affect on line 2.19, that the health boards are able to accrue up to 1 year instead of 6 months of operating expenses, and the reason for that is that otherwise they'd have to reassess and reevaluate every 6 months by going to a year. That puts it on their fiscal year, more efficient use of their resources there. And then also just more clarifying language on line 2.25, this will affect the fiscal note. The main thing there in 2.26 is that instead of a look back of 10 years, it's a look back of 5 years. So in the next round, that will reduce the fiscal note. And then on the rest of the language, again, clarifying language that is requested either by, like, the Commissioner of Health, other things. But on line 3.21, there's several deletions there that are deletions because of previous actions, but deleting Section 31, Article 4, Article 5 in its entirety, Article 7 in its entirety, and two sections in Article 6, and then Article 8 is the language for appropriations. And we put them together in a separate article for your convenience so that you could see them all together. And again, these on the Section 3 amounts, these are from the preliminary fiscal note, but with this amendment, it will reduce those numbers by virtue of this amendment. And that mainly has to do with the look back to 5 years instead of 10 years. So, Madam Chair, that's a summary of the amendment.
All right. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, maybe the author could give a little clarification. I don't see Representative Abler here, but...
he is.
He's here.
Oh, mm-hmm. I still don't see him. But,
Madam Chair, just
take... He's not in one of his chairs.
Representative Kim Fryer.
Madam Chair and Representative Carlson, just to explain that in the last committee with Representative Abler, he had some bills that he needed to keep moving, and so I carried them with me for a while, but they found other homes, which he can explain.
Yeah, Madam Chair, Representative Kiffmeyer, I guess that's not necessarily my question, but I see this other amendment, and you reference some of the sections, if I was following you, that this amendment would delete, that you're deleting, and I'm just wondering how that coordinates with what I was told secondhand about a potential, I haven't talked directly to Representative Abler, but I did try to find you yesterday, and my understanding was that you were going to remove all of the Health and Human Services sections because they had been passed in earlier legislation. And I'm just trying to figure out the coordination between the two amendments here. I'm assuming this amendment may be yours, the A-26.
Representative Carlson, just in for members of the committee, for clarification purposes, if you pull the A-26 amendment, what we've already adopted with the A-25 amendment is Articles 4, 5, and 7 are completely gone with the A-25 amendment. Article 6 in the A-25 amendment deletes Sections 1 and Section 6 of Article 6.
Okay, so
we have part of Article 6 still in the bill with the A-25 amendment. So, Representative Abler.
Well, thank you, Mr. Madam Chair, Representative Carlson, and Representative Kahn as well. The Sunset Commission work this time focused on the licensing boards. And a good deal of that had to do with background studies. The licensing, we attached two licensing bills to that in the Ways and Means Committee, in the Health Finance Committee, because they also had background studies, and it seemed like a bad idea, and they were way different than the version that Ripson Kiffmeyer has come up with now. And so it occurred to me, both for reasons of some convenience, but more for reasons of policy, that they should all have the same background study work done, and if they were going to pass, because they came in with those, and so that was why the 80 was even germane to the bill in the first place, not because it was a board bill, but because of the background study piece. So you didn't want to have the sunset bill pass with its background study method, and then have two other licensing board provisions pass with different background provisions, of which would be the governing sections. That was the reason for that. The way it turns out is actually the way you would prefer anyway, is that yesterday on the floor we passed those licensing bills absent background study provisions. But given the concern about expanding the bill to be a licensing bill, I determined to take those out at this committee anyway, whether they would have passed or not. The remaining section in the bill is some, since the next year the sunset bill will talk about something else, none of these amendments would be germane or relevant or appropriate. The remaining area section of the bill, 6, has to do with the function of the boards relative to licensees and so on. That was worked out actually a year and a half or so with Senator Erickson Ropes. And she didn't come back. But so there's some interim work done, and these are all agreed on by the boards. They have to do with totally just board function, general board function. They're not controversial, and that's why those remain. They're just good policy relating to board function and how they handle licensing, sanctions, etc. So that's the remainder part. And so if those could stay in, it would be nice.
Representative Carlson.
And Madam Chair, I wasn't trying to belabor the point. I was just trying to coordinate these amendments to see how that fit what I was told secondhand in terms of what the goal was going to be here this morning in terms of removing the health and human service language. So thank you.
Right. Representative Lucheski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Are we on the A25?
We, Representative Kiffmeyer has moved it, but we have not adopted it yet.
Okay.
Or voted, I'm sorry. Representative Lucheski.
Well, if I may, then, Madam Chair, it's really not a question for Representative Kiffmeyer. It's for you or Representative Davids. You know, once again, all the fees are before us, and this continues to be, for the last 2 years now, there's been literally dozens of bills that don't go to taxes that should, in my estimation. And, you know, there's really not much to say other than that. I mean, if you look at the A25, it's one fee and surcharge after another. And we have a statute that says something different. And I know we can all pull out the rules, and then we can get to the part of the yellow book that says, if this chair and this chair get together and say the rule doesn't apply, then it doesn't apply. But, you know, really, why have this rule? I mean, I understand the circumstance occasionally when the finance and tax chair need to get together to do that, but it's just the fact is our custom and usage has become every single author and every single chair gets to increase and decrease fees and do surcharges and not, and that has not been what we've done for about, you know, 6 years in the Minnesota House. And I'm actually fine with understanding that the way the new majority believes that fees and surcharges aren't revenue, I think we should just put that in the rules. I think it's been interesting to me to watch that the more liberal part of the state has been very diligent on calling fees and surcharges revenue, and the more conservative party in the state has been not recognizing them as revenue. They don't go to the tax committee. They continually pass through this committee. I think every day that I've been on this committee this year, I've raised this. Representative Beard's bill is coming up. It's full of fees and revenue issues going on. And I just want to know if I should just stop raising it forever, because forevermore we aren't going to pay attention to these.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Lucheski. There are no fee changes in this bill. These surcharges and fees are already collected. There are no changes to the amount of fees collected or any additional fees or surcharges or anything like that. What we are doing is appropriating money which is collected by current fees to the Special Revenue Fund. We are appropriating that money for the purpose by which the fees were collected for.
Representative Lucheski.
Well, Madam Chair, again, I heard Representative Kiffmeyer, and my question was to you and Representative Davids. I do not interpret what has just been said as the practice of this body for the last 6-8 years. Could either one of the chairs who are actually in charge of this issue comment about the practice of the Minnesota House Majority as it relates to fees and surcharges?
There's David's. Well, for my purposes relative to this bill, I didn't view it as a fee increase. I viewed it as the A25 amendment appropriating the necessary money, as Representative Kiffmeyer said, to perform the functions in the bill. And sometimes you have to put a bill together and get a fiscal note to know how much money you need to give them to do the actions. So, you know, we're appropriating money in the Ways and Means Committee. I think that's appropriate. But
Madam Chair?
If I might.
Okay.
Chair Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I'm just going by the House rules.
All right. Representative Abler.
Madam Chair, Representative Lincheski, this bill is not one of your problem bills that you're concerned about. There's not one penny of new revenue collected here. There's appropriated existing revenue that's in the special revenue fund for a purpose that we're wanting to spend it for. But there's not one more penny being collected by any licensing board in this bill. So I understand your concern. It's a concern for a different bill. That's all.
Representative Lincheski.
Well, Madam Chair, I mean, that's kind of the issue is, it's sort of saying, you know, Representative Lincheski has an issue with these, and she's sort of the annoying person who keeps bringing them up. And this one you shouldn't be annoyed about. There's other ones you should be annoyed about. So
that's what I said.
Right. And I think Representative Beard's bill coming up will do even more. and you can watch, you know, what's going on. I think some of the next, when that one comes up, you can see some of the amendments will be deleting some of these new revenue sources like pilot projects for transit. But these are bills that go through taxes generally, and I'm actually completely comfortable if the majority would say we don't mean it anymore, and we're going to have author after author not go through the tax committee. And the reason I raise it on the record is just, Madam Chair, there is only one committee in the state of Minnesota, in the Minnesota House, that's supposed to raise revenue, just one. That's why it's the tax committee. And to have renegade chairs, finance chairs, and authors working in revenue, that's not the role of those areas. And I will say it is bipartisan. You know, when we were in the majority, you know, we worked really hard to ride herd on all these finance chairs who were dreaming up fees and ways to create revenue within their bills to buy stuff they wanted. But it is the tax committee that people expect to raise the $34 billion that we need per biennium to fund this government. And so I guess what bothers me about it is it's sort of like we have this rule, but we don't really mean it. And I think we should just, you know, say we're just not going to do it anymore. And everybody can do whatever they want with fees and surcharges, because that has been the practice this last couple of years. We've seen very few of these sort of bills go through the tax committee. And I just want to put it on the record. I think we've established what this majority believes about them, and that they're not really revenue and they don't really need to go through the tax committee. I think it'll just become part of the practice of the future. It'll be difficult for folks if the majority ever switches to say that bill should have gone through taxes, because custom and usage is changing all of this. So I appreciate you letting me spout off. I won't do it on Representative Beard's bill. You can all find all the revenue in that one too.
Thank you, Representative Lincheski. Representative Davids.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just refer members to the permanent rules of the House, Rule 4.10, Item C, Paragraph C. And if you go and take a look at that on page 20, and I'll just read it for the record, it says, for purpose of this paragraph, tax excludes any fee, charge, exaction, or assessment, a primary purpose of which is to recover direct or indirect costs incurred by the state or other governmental entity, or as a payment for benefits received. I'd have a question of Mr. Marks, however. I understand fee, charge, assessment. What's an exaction? It sounds like medical.
Mr. Marks.
Madam Chair and Representative Davids, I think it's a fee that it exacts a sum from someone.
Okay, so I would just point that out to members, that we're well within the permanent rules of the House.
Representative Kahn, did you want to get into this discussion?
Yes, I do. I think it's time. Maybe we could have an amendment drafted to delete that statute that says it taxes as a fee. If people remember, it was the unholy alliance between two people who are now far gone, Representative Krinke and Senator Pognola. At one point, Senator Betzalt and I did manage to repeal it in a state government finance bill, which actually passed, but on the redoing of it, Senator Pognola paid attention to it and threw his required fit, so we didn't get to do it again. I do recall that the bill, because it had fees, did go through the tax committee. I did recall Representative Lencheski making a passion plea to keep it, and it was soundly defeated on, I think, a roll call vote in that committee, so that we did repeal it. I do think it's now to repeal it, or at least in any bill where we're not considering, put in the notwithstanding so that it's clear that we're ignoring it. And then as we get places to find more and more places where we're ignoring it, maybe people should understand that we should repeal it. The state got along for more than a century without this language, and I think it will do perfect since, you know, the only purpose of having it in is to have someone raise a point that we're ignoring it. It's time to do it. I don't know if you want an amendment now, Madam Chairman, to repeal that part of the statute, or if you'd rather wait for the floor to do it.
But God, I'm afraid if that gets put on this, we'd have to go to the tax committee. So.
No.
Maybe you should wait for the floor. Representative Lencheski.
Well, Madam Chair, we're way afield of Representative Kiffmeyer's bill, but, you know, I appreciate the conversation because this is the Ways and Means Committee, and members should think about how we're going to do this. And I've actually disagreed with Representative Kahn. She knows that. I'm actually comfortable
with... And she's wrong.
And, you know, I am in a minority on that in my party.
Yeah.
I'm perfect. It is revenue. When you put a license, a fee increase on people who are fishing, I mean, it's revenue. So, you know, I've been in the minority on that. And you know, I just want to say for folks who may be watching that when that tax versus fee, people want to talk about that. That was Senator Pogamil and Representative Krinke, and that's true. They agreed to do it after. Why did that all come to being? I think those of us who've been here know. It's when Governor Pawlenty called a tobacco tax increase a fee. And we watched for 2 years while everybody did this semantics about a tax is a fee, and the Taxpayers League weighed in and said a fee is a tax. And so that was put in, and so I think it's you know, people understand that, you know, fees and taxes are kind of the same thing. What I'm saying isn't about what Representative Kahn's raising. What I'm saying is there's been a lot of scrutiny for a long time, for the last 4 years, that every little nickel fee get driven through taxes. And yet now, in the last 2 years, that is no longer the case. And I just wish we would be consistent, and if majorities change, the new majority right now will drop their opposition to fees being carried by authors in bills and through finance chairs, and they all get to skip the tax committee. Because I think we're just being really inconsistent around here. And it's okay sometimes and not others. And I just, again, appreciate raising it. My issue is not with Representative Krinke and Senator Pogamiller, but this all came to a head over the tobacco tax increase that is still in law as a health impact fee.
Okay, Representative Kahn.
Well,
if I might just, so I know that there's no way we're going to get to House File 2967, so if you're in the audience for that, we'll make an announcement for when the committee will reconvene after session. Representative Kahn.
Again, I'm sorry if I'm the only person who's fussy about semantics in this group, but the Ways and Means Committee is the appropriate place to discuss the full financial implication of fees and taxes, not the tax committee. And the thing that was so obnoxious about that at the time was that it had obviously was being kept on strongly by the Senate, by the Senate majority leader, and the Senate was totally ignoring it. It was only the House that was making all these bills go through taxes. And if you remember, Representative Lencheski, the final result of that taxes a fee thing was the court deciding that it was indeed a tax. And the reason was is that there was an agreement that there could be no extra fees put on with a national agreement with cigarette companies. So essentially you had to say that calling it a fee was just an artifact, and it was specifically a tax, and it was, you know, totally ridiculous to have done that anyway. But I think it's now that it's time that we understand what we're doing. We agree with what you are saying, that we're totally ignoring this thing, and the way you get rid of a statute that you're totally ignoring is you repeal it. So I hope you'll support me to do that on the floor of the House.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't want to belabor this, but I agree with Representative Kahn.
Good.
And I was on the Tax Conference Committee when this unusual agreement came about between Senator Pogamiller and Representative Krenke. I thought it was ridiculous at the time. I think it's ridiculous today, and this is not the time or place to do it, but it ought to go.
Okay, anybody else want to weigh in on our little discussion? All right, we have the A25 amendment before the committee. Are there any additional questions on the A25 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The A25 amendment is adopted. Representative Kiffmeyer, I think we figured out that the A26 amendment isn't really in play anymore. At least from your perspective, and then there's an A27 amendment. Is that yours? Or
no, Madam Chair, it is not my amendment.
And is anybody going to claim that so we have more fun this morning? Representative Kahn.
Yes, Madam Chairman, we're now back to where this is the Sunset Commission bill, and if anything ever needed a sunset, again, just by the concept of semantics and of just being honest with ourselves, it's clearly the Sunset Advisory Commission. I don't care exactly when it should be sunsetted. I don't know where we put it in. I don't mind postponing the date if this is too early. But I would like to move the A27 amendment, and in fact, I want a roll call vote on it.
Right.
I just want to understand if people understand what language. Well, maybe the author will just accept it, and then I won't need a roll call vote. But I just think that if this means anything, it should apply to itself.
All right, members, Representative Kahn is moving the A27 amendment and has asked for a roll call vote. This amendment would sunset the Sunset Commission, or do we need any additional discussion?
I'd like to hear from the author.
Pardon?
I would like to hear from the author about any reason why we shouldn't.
Take your amendment. Representative Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Kahn, I would ask the members of the committee here to not support and not adopt this amendment. I believe that the Sunset Commission is doing good work. We have had 32 hours of hearings and testimony in regards to all of the areas under review by the Sunset Commission, which is more time than they've been given by anybody in past years, and attention to their work, to their efforts. And I believe that the bill we brought forward is productive and supported. And I think that to do away with it when it hasn't even been in existence for a short time to prove itself would be premature, absolutely, and I think that the work of the Sunset Advisory Commission deserves to continue, so I ask for a no vote.
Well, Representative Kahn.
Madam Chairman, as I understand anything about Sunset Advisory Commissions or how it operates, and in fact what we saw was that almost only one commission was eliminated, and that was just moved somewhere else. So we've seen that the result of this is not to eliminate parts of state government, but merely to make sure that they get an adequate review. And if anything needs an adequate review, I would think it ought to be a new one like the Sunset Advisory Commission. And as I care, I'm not, maybe staff can tell me exactly where we've put the exactly where we've put this, what time we've put this review to take place. I don't mind it taking place later if that's an appropriate thing. If we're having it happen, maybe we can have staff who wrote the amendment for me tell me where it takes place.
Ms. Novak.
Madam Chair, the amendment puts it into the Group 2 sunset, I believe, yes. And that sunsets on June 30th, 2014. There is a Group 1 sunset that sunsets on June 30th, 2024. Well, and there are others.
Okay, the Group 2 sunset seems pretty good. That means it would get a lot of attention in the next legislative session. That means it might be an issue that we talked about in the campaign. I think that ought to be time enough for it to prove its worth. If someone wanted to put some other date in, that would be okay. But 2014 looks okay to me. I just was worried from the discussion, from what the author said. I thought we were just, like, eliminating it right away. And I might want to do that, but I don't think that, even I don't think that's fair. Well, but 2014 seems fine.
People would always say that you're reasonable.
I know.
Representative Biscus. Representative Downey.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. We actually had this discussion in state government finance, and I agreed with Representative Kahn that in concept, the Sunset Commission should not be the only thing that exists in perpetuity. But the way this amendment is drafted flat out doesn't work. We add the Sunset Commission to a group of agencies that the Sunset Commission has to review. And so we're actually, by virtue of this, asking the Sunset Commission to review itself in another year. And I think what would be more appropriate would be for the Office of the Legislative Auditor or some other set of hearings in committee to do that kind of work. So I agree with her. I think the commission itself warrants some observation. Might be better to wait until all of the agencies, the big agencies, have been reviewed so you really have an understanding of the power of this thing before doing it. But I'd argue against the amendment for the reasons that I don't think it really works in the bill.
Well,
Representative Kahn.
Madam Chair, I think it shows that I have faith in the Sunset Advisory, just judging by the work they did this year. I have faith in their doing adequate work. And I don't understand. I evaluate everything I do every day. And sometimes I don't like it, and sometimes I do like it. But, you know, I think that they can evaluate themselves while they're evaluating other things. So I'm standing by my amendment.
All right. Any questions for Representative Kahn? Roll call being requested. Mr. Smith will take the roll.
Representative Holberg.
No.
Representative Downey.
No.
Representative Carlson.
Yes.
Representative Abler.
No.
Representative Bruce Anderson.
No.
Representative Sarah Anderson.
No.
Representative Beard.
Nay.
Representative Breinert.
Yes.
Representative Biskins.
Yes.
Representative Champion.
Yes.
Representative Davids.
No.
Representative Eakin.
Yes.
Representative Garofalo.
No.
Representative Gottwald.
No.
Representative Greiling. Representative Gunther.
No.
Representative Hackbarth.
No.
Representative Hamilton.
No.
Representative Hornstein.
Yes.
Representative House. Representative Huntley. Representative Kahn.
Yes.
Representative Kiffmeyer.
No.
Representative Lanning.
No.
Representative Lencheski.
No.
Representative McNamara. Representative Nornes.
No.
Representative Pulowski.
No.
Representative Rukavina. Representative Slawick. Representative Smith.
No.
Representative Wagenius.
Yes.
Representative Westrom.
No.
With a vote of 8 yeses and 19 noes, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted. Are there any other questions? I'm not aware of any other amendments on House File 2555. Seeing none, Representative Kiffmeyer, if you'd like to renew your motion.
Yes, Madam Chair, I renew my motion to pass House File 2555 as amended and be recommended to pass and be proceeded to the General Register. And just to emphasize again, there is no increase in fees, no increase in surcharges, no revenue has been increased by $1 in this bill, and it is an appropriation appropriate to the uses of these boards.
All right. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay?
No.
No. Motion prevails. Thank you, Representative Kiffmeyer. Representative Beard, let's take up House Bill 2169. See if we can get that one.
We can't figure out basically.
Yeah. And members, I'm sorry to say that the three transportation bills, 2685, 867, and 1821, will not be heard before session. So this will be our last bill before session. My apologies. Representative Beard moves House File 2169.
Madam Chair, and to get the bill in the shape that I think we'll need to talk about for purposes of this committee, I offer the DE4 amendment.
Representative Beard moves the DE4 amendment to House File 2169. It is, as you can see, a delete all amendment. If you would like to explain to the committee.
Yes, Madam Chair, House File 2169, in my opinion, started out as a great bill regarding tying the agencies and the committees of this legislature more tightly together, particularly as it relates to rulemaking, proposed rulemaking, and so on and so forth. As it's made its way through the committee process, the issue of fiscal notes has arisen, and once again, the agencies get to, I think, assert a considerable amount of sway over how much policy we can afford to make by issuing fiscal notes. At one time, this fiscal note was near $1 million. I think this morning's fiscal note is something in the neighborhood of $644,000. With the amendment that you have in front of us, I'll take out some more policy, and the fiscal note should be somewhere in the neighborhood of $100,000 or less. And you'll note that there is an amendment, or it is implied in the bill, that the cost of preparing any of the reports that are still remain in the bill and interacting with the legislature will just be absorbed by the agencies, so there will be no general fund expenditures required to comply with House File 2169 as amended if you should adopt the DE4 amendment. If you'd like, I can go through each line of the DE4 amendment, or we can just adopt it and cut out the cost.
I think that must be the bill, doesn't it?
Reduce the fiscal note.
All right, members, any question on the DE4 amendment?
They're taking out sections one. What's
Representative
left?
Representative Conn, it's a DE4 amendment, so it's a delete all.
I'm sorry. Okay.
If you'd like, Madam Chair, I can go through the bill and just tell you what's all left of the bill.
Yes.
Members, if you want to start on
Beard.
Page 1, delete section 1. Page 2, that whole page is gone. Page 3, reports to the commission, that page is gone. On page 3, that page will be gone with the DE amendment, including the criteria for review by committees. Let's see. I think section 5 is the first part. So section page 4 is gone. Page 5, the new section 1 will be section 5 of the bill.
Yeah.
The authority to adopt original rules restricted. And this has to do with interacting with the committees and explaining the rules that are coming forward. On page 6, subdivision 1 at the top, that will be gone.
That's actually kind of good.
I propose to keep section 7 and section 8 on page 6. You still with me? Page 7 stays in the bill. On page 8, sections 9 and 10 are removed. They are deleted. And the last little portion on page 8, section 11, dealing with reports. Reports that are being done anyhow because of an executive order. Section 11 remains in the bill. So the bill is a shadow of itself from when it started this journey, but it still is a good bill and I think worth passing into law as we try to clarify and connect the agencies and the rulemaking with the committees and the legislature that have jurisdiction over those committees.
Representative Conn.
Well, there's still one line in it that looks a little problematic to me,
good.
And that's 1.7, the new language that says only that are necessary to serve the public interest. how to, you know, at one point when I worked on trying to restrict rules, it was, you know, I think that was when we really added, we liked the language only pursuant to authority delegated by law, that you ought to be able to point to a specific law before you take any rules. As far as I can see, that any rule in the world could be defined as necessary to serve the public interest. We have, you know, law, when we delegate something by law, we try to be a little precise, but this sentence just looks as if that opens absolutely everything. I imagine, Representative Beard, that you and I have a very different viewpoint of what something necessary to serve the public interest would be. Mm. And so I don't think we ought to put things that are open to that broad range of interpretation in. And I'd like to know why I shouldn't move to just strike that new language.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, Representative Kahn, when we were putting this bill together, this is actually a bill that I intend to have the governor sign. So I've worked very carefully with all of the agency people who have interacted, particularly the lead person representing the agencies. And one of the things they asked for was the ability to defend the public purpose, whatever that means. Representative Kahn, I agree with you.
Well, let's take
and
it
And so
up.
If you want to strike it, I will accept it as a friendly amendment, and we can strike it. But at the moment, we have a DE-1 amendment in front of us, Madam Chair.
Oh, okay.
Should we adopt the DE-1
well,
and then
DE-4.
Talk about that? Or the DE-4, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Whatever your process is, I would speak in favor of the Kahn amendment if and when it's appropriate to make it.
Well, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair.
Representative Kahn.
Isn't it appropriate to offer an amendment to the DE-4 amendment?
Sure.
Certainly.
Okay. Well, I'd
Representative Kahn.
I'd move to strike that parentheses 3 and, you know, renumber as appropriate.
I think what might work a little better is just delete section 1 of the bill, given that there's no other changes.
Ooh,
so
true.
If you delete section 1, then we go back to current law.
Yep.
So
Madam Chair, I'd like to hear staff speak to that suggestion, if that indeed accomplishes what Representative Kahn is suggesting.
Madam Chair.
Ms. Novak.
Madam Chair and members, the only other changes to Section 1 are formatting changes, and if that's not important, you can just delete this section.
Well, Representative Erickson isn't on our committee, so I think we can get by with just deleting
yeah.
Section 1.
Okay.
And then also, if you might, with your oral amendment, also change on line 1 the word second to third. If you'd like to incorporate that into your amendment, we can
just
take care
fix
of that
it anyway.
At the same
yep.
time. All right. Representative Kahn moves to delete section 1 and on line 1, page 1, change the word second to third. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. Prevails. Okay. Any other questions or comments on the DE-4 amendment as amended? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Beard, now that this is a shadow of what your bill was, tell me what's left.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, if the DE-4 amendment as amended is adopted, it still does three things that I think are worthy of the effort to pass the bill. It requires agencies to provide each year their rulemaking docket and the list of approved rules to the standing committees. That changes from current practice in that right now when they propose rules, you'll get an electronic notification. They come by one at a time. What we're proposing is that by a date certain, and I think it's January 15th of each year, they have to tell you what they did last year and what the whole docket is for proposed for the coming year, because these things take time. So each standing committee and the Legislative Coordinating Commission will get that notification. That is a change. The second thing is it requires the agencies to include in their statement of need and reasonableness an assessment of the cumulative effects of the proposed rule given as they relate to other state and federal rules. Originally, I'd wanted it to include local ordinances. That was a big reach. Even I agreed that was, so we dropped the locals. But it's still, they have to explain
when they're talking about their dockets and the rules they're proposing to make, how they interact with other state and federal rules and what the cumulative effect would be. So I think that's still a benefit that's worth pursuing. The third thing is it requires the five environmental agencies, PCA, DNR, and the Department of Ag, to each update their decade-old report that they did in 2000 and started in 2000 and completed in 2003. It also adds Bowser and the Environmental Quality Board, EQB, are asked to do a report on the rules that they have promulgated since they've been in existence. That is in compliance with a an executive order. It's in process now, and they'll be asked to just bring that to the corresponding committees as well. So there's really three things that we're asking them to do that I think are still worth pursuing. And the cost of doing that, I think they can absorb within their agency budgets because most of this are supposed to be doing already anyhow.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Representative Beard, each of the bureaucracies will come forward with a report to each of the committees here in the House and in the Senate? Or
correct.
Okay.
In the legislature, yes.
That'll be each year?
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, Representative Anderson, we're asking them to update as they did in the with the 2000 legislation and as they reported in 2003, which strikes me as more than adequate to comply. If they would update those reports and bring them forward, then each year they would just notify us of their docket, the complete proposed set of rules that they're proposing for the year.
Thank you.
Any additional questions? Seeing none, Representative Beard renews his motion DE4 as amended. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed nay. The DE4 amendment as amended is adopted. Okay, Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Beard, I am. I think there's some great unintended consequences from your language on the definition of cumulative effect. I mean, I actually appreciate those. I know that our business community is looking at what it costs to add another rule. But when you look at this language and you say cumulative effect that results, there's always the cumulative effect of what happens to the public domain when another rule comes into play. And so the flip side of this, of course, is that particularly for the metropolitan area, I'll use that as an example, it's not the only example, but in the metropolitan area, the cumulative effect of adding another permit with additional air pollution or not having a rule to take away that air pollution means that we're on the cusp of not being in compliance with federal law, particularly on fine particulate matter. So it seems to me that the way this is written, and I appreciate this unintended consequence, is that we will now know, particularly for air where we're on this cusp of not complying, whether a rule brings us into compliance, helps us not go over that that standard, or not doing the rule would make us go over the standard. So this one has a interesting play that I think maybe is a good idea.
Representative Beard.
Madam Chair, I couldn't agree more. I think that rather than have these things kind of sneak up on us as legislators, if we have the discussion going forward that there are going to be rules proposed to do A, B, and C, we can engage in the discussion beforehand and have a full vetting of what the benefit is, what the cost is, and we can actually have a rational discussion about the effect of what layering rules on top of each other means. Perhaps there's a way we can do things better. I think that shining light on it and having that discussion is actually a good thing, and it might be treading a little into the unknown as to how it's going to actually play out should this bill become law, but I think that's a risk that the legislature should take And I think that the ensuing discussion and debate would be good for everybody. And so I'm glad that Representative Wagenius and I agree on this issue.
Wagenius.
Well, I think actually, when I look at it, it's not whether you and I think it's a good idea, but the public will know.
Yes.
Whether or not we are going to meet our the air quality standards, whether we're taking enough steps because of this cumulative effect of adding another permit and another permit and other things coming in, but we can go in the opposite direction too. So it's an interesting concept, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Beard, and I appreciate that. You know, this bill is less than it was before, and that you're working to try to get something signed. I mean, that doesn't happen enough, I think. But I was wondering if, you know, what the perspective of the new version of this is from the agencies. And I know that, you know, they wouldn't necessarily support it, but they had opposed the earlier version of your bill.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if they're still, if there's, to use one of your words, heartburn over this. Because it is significantly less. I have concerns about it, but I wanted to know what the perspective of the agencies would be, especially the ones that you name in Section 4.
Madam Chair.
Representative Beard.
Representative Hornstein, if you're referring to the ones that do the reports by January 15th, I will not propose to speak for them, but I have had some of them in my office saying, well, we're doing this report on the 15th anyhow. We may have to tweak it a bit to make it acceptable to what you're looking for here. Perhaps we could have another month to comply, and I'm happy to do that. I doubt that any of them get up in the morning and go, oh, joy, we're really glad that Beard's about to pass this bill. But and as I asserted before, the bill in its original form, they testified in several committees about their concerns of the cost and, in fact, exerted a great deal of influence on the policy I was trying with the fiscal note.
Right.
So we pared that down to even they're agreeing now that, well, this is a minimal fiscal impact. We can comply with this. But, I'm not going to speak for them beyond that other than that they've stopped throwing rocks at my car when I leave the parking ramp, figuratively speaking, of course. Nobody's actually done that. But still, I think if they would like to weigh in with individual legislators as we take this to the floor for discussion, or if there's a conference committee they could comment again, I'd certainly welcome that. But I've tried to hear and accommodate by the amendment that you have here this morning.
Thank you.
Any additional brief questions? Seeing none, Representative Beard, if you'd like to renew your motion.
Madam Chair, I move the motion that 2169 as amended be referred to the General Register.
All those in favor say aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion prevails. Members, we will be in recess. Please take your four green files for the remaining bills and put them back in your brown folders so you'll have your materials for the remainder of the meeting this evening. And with that, we're in recess.